Welcome to Pretend I Know Nothing About. I'm Katie White, your host, administrator of COAAA. Thousands of contacts come into our screening department each and every month. Today we'll learn from Mary Kate and Chelsea about the supportive and educational experience provided by our screening team to those who need us. Well, welcome. Today we are learning from Mary Kate Levins, Screening and Pre-Admissions Review Manager, and Chelsea Russell, Screener Extraordinaire. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Mary Kate, let's start with you.
Thanks. I am the manager for Screening and Pre-Admission Review, and in that role, I do a lot of different things because they're two very different departments. Okay. So with screening, it's a lot of managing referrals, handing them out, talking about them, consulting regarding those, interfacing with ODA and ODM, Franklin County Senior Options in particular, a little bit with MyCare. And then with pre-admission review, that's completely separate people, different department. And we interface primarily with nursing facilities and the community.
Okay.
And assessment. We work a lot with assessment in pre-admission review. I've been here about 4.5 years. I came from the Office on Aging, where I worked for Senior Options and then in the QI department, Provider Relations. And I was there from 2013 to 2019. Prior to that, I was at Heritage Day Health Centers for 10 years in the joyous world of adult day health, which is lovely to work in. And prior to that, I was in nursing facilities and hospice care.
Okay. And you're a licensed social worker.
I am a licensed social worker.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for coming on today.
Thank you for having us.
Chelsea, how about you?
So I have been here almost 7 years, been with screening about 1.5 years. Prior to that, I was in a nursing facility doing a lot of the long-term residents. We kind of split it that way. So I did a lot of the long-term people. And my role is I answer a lot of the live phone calls that come in. That's primarily my day-to-day. So I'm getting a lot of referrals, but also people calling, aren't sure even where to start. We get a few that say, I'm calling for my passport. I want to travel. They Google passport, we get them. So I'm getting a lot of different calls every day.
Okay. And what did you do before screening at COAAA?
I was with the Aetna MyCare program.
Okay. Yep. I love this part to see where kind of everybody started and came from to get here. So
yep, I was up there about 5.5.
Great. So probably at the beginning of MyCare then.
Yeah, I came in at 2016, so they were a few years old.
Okay, got it. So we release 2 episodes at a time. So during this release, it's going to be the screening episode and the assessment episode. So what I'd like us to do is kind of talk about when somebody calls COAAA, whether they speak to someone at the front desk or know to directly get into the screening department. What does that look like? So I know we get roughly 4,000 or 5,000 phone calls through the front desk every month, but Mary Kate, talk to me a little bit about how the calls come in and some of that call volume into the screening department.
Sometimes the calls do start at the front desk and they will transfer many different calls to screening. But now that we have the phone tree, we're getting direct calls as well. I looked at December and we had 3,095 calls for the month of December for screening.
3,095 calls for the month of December in screening.
Right. And we have 10 people that manage the calls.
And when we say calls, that can actually mean emails and requests from our website, or that's just
phone calls?
That was just
phone calls.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so then how about total contacts that came in for the month of December?
That was, for December was 929, which was actually low for the year. We, in April, had 812, and in May jumped to 1,172.
Oh, my goodness.
So that was a 44% increase in contacts.
Okay.
And our phone messages increased 70% in that time as well.
So an individual can call our front desk and press one to get to the screening department, which is a new change, but we're trying to kind of work on some efficiency, maybe because our volume's so high, or they can directly call the screening department through the OBLTSS phone line.
Yes, there we manage two phone lines. Okay. So we have the ACD call line, which the screeners answer through COAAA.
Okay.
And then the state has a statewide Ohio Benefits, Long-Term Services and Supports phone line that anyone in the state can call. And then based on the zip code you enter, it is directed to your PAA. And those come in daily as well. So we're managing two separate phone lines throughout the day.
So we have a huge amount of call volume that comes in. What is the screening department providing just in general?
The screening department is literally, as designated by ODA, the front door. So a lot of calls come in regarding a lot of different requests. Some of it is INR, so information and referral or information and access to other agencies. But we are primarily, most of our time is spent on the true referrals. So helping people decide what program through a Medicaid waiver they might be eligible for.
Okay.
Filling out the initial screen for that. If they're not going to be eligible due to level of care, finances, then we are trying to search for other programs that they may be eligible for that will help them with whatever their presenting request is. So it's just a lot of conversation about what is it you're calling about, what is your need, and how can we direct you to any available appropriate resource that might be in this area for them.
Okay. So, Chelsea, one of your primary roles is answering the live calls, you said. So there's a number of different voicemails and things like that that we get, but there's always a couple people on the live calls. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Roughly how many people are on live calls at once?
You mean as far as like screeners or people calling in?
Screeners.
I would say four.
Okay. Okay. So you get a call and someone wants to understand whether or not they are eligible to join Passport or MyCare. So we know they're going to need an assessment. Walk me through what the questionnaire is that you complete with an individual before they are scheduled for an assessment.
So we really get just a basic high-level overview of what tasks each person's needing help with, like the bathing, dressing, grooming, things like that. If they're needing help with meds, what their health conditions are. We get a little bit into other social determinants of health to see, can we link you with any mental health resources? Do you need a referral to a Department of Developmental Disabilities? Do you need substance abuse, AOD services, things like that. So we get a little into that to try to link with some more resources. But the general, most of the time we get into that ADLs, the bathing, dressing, grooming, health conditions. Do you need a nurse? Do you have a skilled need? Things like that.
Okay. And what about, so that's more of like the level of care. Mm-hmm. And in the assessment episode, we'll talk a little bit about level of care. But what about the financial requirement? Are you asking that type of thing too?
Yes. We ask how much your monthly income is, what your assets are. And we have all those numbers from Medicaid and JFS so we can tell someone if they're likely eligible. We don't make the determination. That's up to Job and Family Services, but we can kind of give them an idea. Are you going to be eligible? Are you absolutely no way eligible? Could you spend down a little? You know, things like that. So we can give them a ballpark of should they or should they not be eligible.
And what is that monthly income eligibility level at these days? I know it kind of changes, right, as cost of living changes.
It just changed in January 1st. Yep.
$2,829, I think.
Okay. And so that, if they're making more than that, then they would not be eligible for Medicaid?
Not necessarily. They could set up a qualified income trust, and that's for anything over that $2,829.
So how does that work?
Well, that really, we can give you like some basic information on that, but that typically goes through like a bank. You're going to set that okay. up like another bank account. Okay. They can use it to pay share of cost for medical bills, expenses that are necessities for them, things like that. So it doesn't necessarily make them ineligible, but a lot of people either aren't interested in losing a certain percentage of their income or dollar amount, or they can't afford it or whatever. So sometimes it does make people ineligible just for their own personal reasons.
Okay. And how would someone know to call us to see what they're eligible for? Are they learning about that from their insurance, from ODA, from ODM, or is it just that they've gotten to a certain point in their life and they know they need something?
I think we're a starting point for a lot of people. ODA and ODM definitely advertise to contact us on their websites. The Office on Aging and the Senior Options Program here will also direct people to us. A couple things I did want to clarify is that we process the screens, the initial contact intake for a number of waivers, but not MyCare.
Oh, thank you for clarifying.
So we will process Passport, Assisted Living Waiver, Ohio Home Care Waiver, the Department of Developmental Disabilities, Residential Services, Supplemental Services, SRS, and Ohio RISE, but not MyCare. We will direct people to the MyCare program, but we are not accepting a referral for it.
Because they have to do that
they have
through
to do that
their insurance
through
company.
Through their own insurance.
Okay. Good yeah. clarification. Thank you.
And then the asset level for Medicaid is always $2,000.
Yes.
So the income, you can have a little higher income and set up the QIT, but the asset level is $2,000. Mm-hmm. There is no getting around that.
Yep.
And so if you have more than $2,000, you have to figure something out, and there's a look-back period too, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Does anyone want to explain kind of what that means and looks like?
Yeah, so that look-back period is 5 years. The JFS worker will look back to see if there were any improper transfers. So if you had $50,000 in a bank account and you transferred $48,000 of it to a son, daughter, family member, someone as a gift, they look at that as improper. So then there's some other things that happen, restricted Medicaid coverage and things like that. So they look back 5 years. 5 years in a 1 day, they don't look at it.
Okay.
Or if with estate recovery, you could put your home in a trust. As long as that's been 5 years, they won't look at your home for estate recovery, things like that.
Okay. So any of those assets are 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when somebody calls in and they essentially know that they need some services right now, we are going to work with them and ask them all the questions to see what they might be qualified for.
Correct.
And then if there are steps that we can take to get them connected to what they might be qualified for, we do that as well.
Correct.
And then the name of the actual questionnaire,
The LTSSQ?
Yes.
It's the long-term services and supports questionnaire.
Okay. And so that is what then leads into a referral to get an assessment from our team to go out and actually see someone.
That's right. So the screeners ask many, many questions, fill out the LTSSQ, and they finalize the LTSSQ in the management system we use, which is OBLTSS. Once it's finalized, if it's an ODA referral for Passport or Assisted Living Waiver, then it pops over into PIMS.
Okay.
And our scheduler, we have a person designated to coordinate all the scheduling that has to happen for the assessments. She links those cases from OBLTSS to PIMS, and from there develops the schedule for the day that is sent to the assessors, and from there they make their contacts.
And so in order for that schedule to go over, the LTSSQ
Q
is completed.
Right.
And then that's what prompts it being sent over for the assessment. And then is your team scheduling the assessments, or they're sending over the official referrals?
Our scheduling coordinator is creating a list daily that assigns the people who have been linked for Passport or Assisted Living. The other assessments that we coordinate are level of care for nursing home placement.
Okay.
And RSS comes to scheduling to coordinate being assigned to an assessor. So she puts that list together on a daily basis, assigns all of the referrals to an assessor. And then that list, which is a, it's just an Excel list that we've created, is sent to the assessors every day by Michelle.
Okay.
And then they are responsible for looking through the list, which can range from 10 to sometimes 35 assessments a day. And they're responsible for looking for their name and then contacting those people to set up the assessment directly.
And scheduling it out. Mm-hmm. So how many people total are there on the screening team?
There are currently 12.
Okay.
One person, Michelle, is devoted to our scheduling coordination. Mm-hmm. Chelsea and now Sarah are backups for when she is off, which pulls a screener off of screening. And then Vicky is our triage coordinator. So she is the person that is listening to the many, many voicemail messages that are left daily, sometimes up to 55 or 60.
Wow.
And then trying to assign those out to folks to follow up with. She also collects the faxes, emails, online referrals, and coordinates those. And then I am responsible for pulling off and assigning all the ODM and ODA referrals along with senior options and source point. So we have a few people coordinating all of the information that comes in and then trying to make sure it gets assigned to folks so that they are contacting everyone to get that screen.
So the first time I sat down with you and sat in and listened to a screener, the referrals never stop. They never stop. The fax machine can't turn off. We can't turn off the phone. If it's coming in from certain lines, we absolutely have to pick up that line. And so it feels, and maybe you guys are used to it, but it felt really overwhelming to me when I was there to think it never stops, right?
Right.
And so it sounds to me like there's individuals that are dedicated to coordinating all of the contacts that are not live phone calls, and that's Vicky.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are some people that are taking live phone calls. So, Chelsea, do you only take live phone calls, or kind of tell me how that scheduling works?
No. So I don't – I majority of the time take the live calls.
Okay.
I am still getting senior options referrals, Ohio Department of Medicaid referrals, source points, things like that. But the majority of my day is spent picking up live calls.
Okay. So individuals know when they're scheduled to do the live calls, and then are you scheduled to not do live calls, but you get like a stack of things to work through?
We primarily have four people that are concentrated on the phones. So Stace, Chelsea, Cameron, and Ayesha are primarily answering live calls. Stace almost 100% of the time.
All day, every day.
Live. Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then everyone else is managing the phone messages and then the other types of referrals that we get from ODA, ODM, Senior Options, Source Point. They will on occasion answer live calls as well. And then the people who primarily answer live calls also get some of the other referrals simply because there are so many referrals coming in that they have to be divvied up. I mean, I'll pull off 12 Senior Options referrals. They just have to be given out to everybody available.
Okay.
And if we have people off for scheduled vacations or illness, it just further limits the number of people available to give those out to. And ODA and ODM have a very strict timeline schedule for us,
okay,
which is a one business day turnaround on contacts.
Okay.
So we're required to try to reach out to individuals within one business day for any referral received by ODA and ODM. And they have increased since I've been here. They've added four new ways for them to provide referrals to us. So we get contact us from ODA and ODM. We get the ShareFile referrals from ODM. We have LTSSIs now from ODA. There are so many that it's just hard to keep up with all of them, and we have to pass them out and contact folks within one business day.
So how many different places are referrals coming from? Calls, contacts, emails, faxes?
Right. Phone calls. live and voicemail online through our online contact system.
Mm-hmm.
ODM sends multiple types. We also get veterans referrals through ODM. They have set up an arrangement where if a veteran is seeking a referral, it goes through the ODM,
okay.
comes to us through share files. ODA sends us referrals directly through at least two methods. We do get emails, faxes, and walk-ins.
So like 12 different ways. And are these all centralized? You can go into one place and get all these referrals at once, or do you have to go hunt and peck and check all of the different sources?
Correct.
Every day?
Yes, every day.
So all day long?
Yes, all day long. Yes. So the ODM sends referrals, veterans referrals, text referrals, which is just a name and a phone number, contact us referrals, and then just the normal ODM referrals. They go through one point called share file. ODA sends things to me and Vicky in screening directly.
Okay.
Through email. That's a contact us form. And then they also send us the LTSSIs, which are actually managed through their website. And then senior options, we have to go into the queue system and pull those out individually.
Okay.
Source point faxes to us. And then the rest are, again, like our online contact form and emails. Different professionals will email screening directly, and those go to Vicky. It's just a huge conglomeration of various points of entry that all have to be managed.
It's wild. Linda once described it as a bowl of boiled spaghetti thrown against the wall.
Yes.
So it's like all these noodles all just intertwined, and then you guys go in and pull one out and straighten it out and get people where they need to go.
Yep.
So, Chelsea, you're answering these live calls. You're getting additional referrals on your desk. How do you prepare for your day? How do you prioritize? Tell me a little bit about your day. And you can be honest.
To be truthful, there's no way to prepare because each day is a little different.
Okay.
If I have something left over from the day before, like if I get a call at 4:30 and I didn't finish it, I finish it first thing and then I pick up the phone and I kind of work through the things I need to follow up on from the day before based off of the time that I called the day before. So I don't want to call every day at 9:00. So if I called at 9:00 yesterday, I'll call at noon today.
Okay.
So it kind of works itself out for me.
Okay.
But I kind of just try to pull out one noodle at a time as best I can.
Sure. And so sometimes you are getting a live call and start to finish, you do what you need to do. But other times there's probably calls from the call and follow-ups from the call or voicemails and callbacks. And so do you have a system on paper or on a spreadsheet? How are you keeping track of all of that?
I do one thing at a time.
Okay.
If I get a referral, I start to finish however long that takes.
Okay.
If I can. If I'm waiting for callbacks or if it requires research or whatever the case may be, or if it's at the end of the day, I need Linda, who has already gone for the day, something like that. Those have to wait.
Okay.
But I do it start to finish because there's just so much variable. One call could be 5 minutes. One call could be 55 minutes. So I just try to do it start to finish, or I don't know that any Excel spreadsheet could save me if I didn't do that.
So, okay, this is kind of a weird question, but your phone rings. What kind of call is like the call you hope for when you pick it up?
I kind of like the variety, so I don't really hope for anything.
Okay. That's a good answer.
Truthfully,
that's a good screener.
That's why I like to answer the call live.
You do. Okay.
Because sometimes it's, I'm calling about my mom. We're just getting to this point. What do I do? Sometimes it's, oh, I have my family member who left the country to visit family. They're back. Now we need to get started. They already know. They've been through this once before. They know what the process is. So those are pretty quick.
Okay.
Then we have others who you kind of have to explain from start to finish because they said, my doctor gave me this number. I don't know what you do. Tell me what you do.
Okay.
So we kind of do that. So I like the variety. It's fun.
Thank you for you. I mean, I'm half joking when I say this, but mostly true that I've been here about a year and a half and my phone's been on Do Not Disturb since I started because I like to hear a voicemail and understand what someone might ask of me before I call them back because I'm so anxious about not being able to like have an answer in the moment. So thank goodness for folks like you that feel comfortable and confident and are picking up that phone and helping people kind of no matter what they throw at you.
It is anxiety producing mm-hmm. at times because there are situations that I could answer the phone 5,000 times. That 5,001 is something I've never heard before.
Interesting.
So I have to be okay with saying, I don't know. I will call you back.
Okay.
And at first I was like, oh no, I don't like that. Yeah. I want to have the answer right now.
Yeah.
But they would just want you to be honest with them. They have talked to 4,000 other people. With you being honest with them, they'll say, thank you
yeah.
for at least giving me what you could. Call me when you can.
Yeah.
So.
And we do get good feedback too. Mary Kate, you've shared like some emails or voicemails where people are like, thank you so much for actually calling me back with the information that I needed. And it was so helpful. And in a couple of episodes, we've talked about how fragmented this system is for individuals. Mm-hmm. And yes. So maybe you have to wait a little bit to get your, you know, screening call back or whatever. But once you do get that, we really are that fabric of the community connecting people where they need to go.
And we do have to reach out. ODM and ODA require us on their referrals in particular to reach out 3 times over the course of 5 business days.
Okay.
After that, they do let us wrap it up because it seems as though we've left messages or if their voicemail's set up.
Okay.
If it's not, our phone number has appeared on their phone a number of times. If they're not calling back, then that is as much effort as we need to put into it.
Okay.
So there are some parameters about how often we follow up, simply because we could follow up with some people for weeks and never hear back, and that's not a good use of our time.
Sure, not so, with the volume that you right. have coming in right. nonstop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so then the opposite end of what kind of call do you hope for? Do either of you have a kind of phone call that you dread or that's like really difficult or... You know, it's kind of related to the question I ask a lot of people is like, what's your biggest challenge?
I think having someone call and tell me, like, I know you can't help me and think that I don't want to help them.
Okay.
Either the Medicaid eligibility or they may not meet the level of care or, you know, when I give them these parameters, they get upset and say, well, you just don't want to.
Yeah.
Or if a resource doesn't exist or a service they need doesn't exist, you just don't want to help me. And those are difficult because I do want to help you.
Yeah.
But either you're not there yet with either level of care or financially, or it just doesn't exist. It's just not there.
Yeah. I don't get many referrals, thankfully. Those that I do, I'm like, oh, send him right over to screening. Thanks so much for your help. But the ones that break my heart are, hi, I'm calling and I'm, you know, like looking for the list of low-income older adult housing, or I'm looking for the assisted living that my Medicare is going to pay for. And it's like, oh,
right.
That doesn't exist. Yeah. So having those tough conversations with people, particularly when they're already feeling like you're not doing enough for them or, you know. Yes. Yeah. One of the first times we ever interacted, you were having, I feel like you had just gotten off a bad call. Remember, we were in the lunchroom and you were like, I just like need a second. And I don't know if you like were getting a snack or something and you're like, it's fine. It's just like, sometimes you just need to walk away. And then,
yes.
Yeah. And I definitely walked away like, you're strong. Good for you to just like take a second and then turn around and go back at it.
Yep.
So Mary Kate, how about you? What's one of your biggest challenges?
For me, the challenge is just our volume and the inability to meet the volume. And it has nothing to do with the great people who are doing the job. It's not anything they're not doing. It's simply the sheer number of contacts, referrals that we receive isn't manageable for the number of people in the department.
Yeah.
So I know that that causes people some stress and anxiety. And my goal is for them to understand the great job they're doing and how hard they try and how much their work is appreciated. And having folks understand that, unfortunately, at this point, we will be behind in our callbacks, particularly on the voicemail messages and so forth, and not feeling terrible about that. So that's probably the biggest challenge I face with screening right now.
Yeah. And we've talked about that before and you know, holding some of the pressure and overwhelmed feelings that, you know, your team feels, because there isn't really a way to decrease that, right? You just kind of have to
grin and bear it.
Grin and bear it, put your head down, keep going. And if we know, you know, the 60 plus population is going to double, right?
Right?
So we know more is coming. And then part of the challenge is, I know. We don't necessarily get paid by the widget in screening. So
Correct.
It's not like by answering more calls and doing more things, we get paid more and then we can grow our staff, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like we have a pretty well fixed budget through our ODA administrative budget.
Correct.
And we have to be pretty lean and thoughtful about that. But I do feel like there's going to need to be kind of a breaking point here soon where we need to either advocate and make sure we can get more money, because it's going to be hard to keep staff in. You know, one of the number one reasons we lose mm-hmm. people across the aging sector is burnout. So mm-hmm. if you can't prevent the burnout, then it's going to be hard to keep the people there, which makes
right.
it hard to get the phone calls, which makes it harder for everybody else.
Right. And we have good people. I want to keep them there. And we have some people that have worked for this agency for 25, 30 plus years. And we have some newer folks, but I don't want them to become frustrated and burnt out and not want to be a part of what's a great team.
I agree. I've said a couple times this week, like, I don't know if this is naive or what, but like, I just really want people to like their job
mm-hmm.
here. And
exactly.
so, I mean, authentically, I feel like most folks that I talk to, especially if they're in any kind of supervision role, feel the same way. But then there are some pretty strict boundaries and things that are out of our control in terms of sheer volume, and not only volume, but severity, right? I mean, I would imagine probably the level of need in some of those calls, Chelsea, are they changing? Are they different?
Sometimes they call in and they needed it yesterday.
Yeah.
It's a slow process. There's a lot of things to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just the way it is. It takes time. And when it's an emergency now. Like,
yeah.
I can't wait even 5 minutes. And then you have people who are like, oh, I need this in 6 months. Like, oh, okay, great. Like, you're too early.
6 months, I can do that.
we have people that needed it 6 months ago. We need it in 6 months. So it's, you never really know what's coming. And I think that's also part of the challenge, is that we have to know a lot about a lot.
Yeah.
I can't just know, like, I knew a lot about my care. I came down and I knew everything there was to know about my care. I didn't know anything about anything else. So that's very, it's a lot to know, because you have to know, are you too early? Are you calling 6 months too early? Are you calling, you know, a year too late?
Yeah.
You know, things like that. So you have to know a lot about a lot.
It's breadth and depth in screening,
yes.
right?
Yes.
I need to know a lot about a lot. What other kinds of numbers or data do you want to share? So for somebody listening to get a, you know, an idea about screening, what else do you want to make sure we talk about?
Well, oddly, I just did the statistics for screening for 2023. So last year, we had 12,386 contacts. Many of them were referrals. Some of them were not, just contacts, phone calls, messages, I need a phone number, those sorts of things.
Okay.
And we had 6,743 voicemail messages for the year, managed primarily by one person at a time, which is a lot of information to manage. We completed almost 5,000 of our LTSSQs, so it was 4,927.
Amazing.
Which is the actual referral for someone to move on to an assessment for a waiver service.
Okay.
We had that huge increase from April to May of last year, and I cannot verify why, but my feeling on it is probably related to the end of the emergency for COVID. That was the May 11th, I believe, was the end of all emergency processes for COVID, for Medicaid, ODA, ODM, mm-hmm. some of the things we were following. So it seems as though people perhaps lost some services that they had been getting and now are seeking to have them again, or people who were doing okay during the pandemic now are not, and they need help at home or resources that they didn't need during that time because people were home.
Mm-hmm. And the team grew during 2023, right? So how many staff members did you start with, and how many are you at now again?
We added two full-time.
Screeners.
So we had 10, again, with Vicki and Michelle's duties being outside of the typical screening position. But then we were able to add Cameron and Ayesha, which took us up to 10 people doing the screening function, and then still Vicki and Michelle doing the scheduling, coordination, and the triage functions.
And then you were recently promoted into a new position, and so we'll be adding a supervisor as well. And so really what I'm excited for in your new role is to kind of be able to take a second to step back, not too far back probably, but a little bit back, and kind of see, are there places that we can improve efficiency? Are there, I don't know, resources or software, or anything that we can do to kind of help alleviate some of that burden? Because again, the volume, not likely to stop. We can't do anything about the funnel up here, but what can we do once it gets in our door?
Right. Yeah. I'm excited for that too. It's hard to be as proactive and planful as you would like when you're in the middle of the whatever it is, the fire that's burning.
Well, and you're a very hands-on manager as well. I know you're doing referrals and taking calls and making sure that things are staffed, or if people are off, or it's a holiday. So
trying.
Yeah.
We definitely grieved as a department. We're very excited for, a new opportunity for somebody, but we grieved a little bit.
Yeah. Well, she's not going to be going for
No. It'll just be different.
So. It will be a little bit different. Yeah. Hopefully, though, in 6 months from now, it'll feel different in a good way. And we'll be like, oh my gosh, how did we ever do this without this change?
Right.
That's me. Wishful thinking. Okay. So as we wrap up, what are some of your final thoughts or anything that you want to make sure that people know about the screening department, the screening role? Just some wrap-up thoughts.
We touched on some of them. I really just like to emphasize how much the screeners have to know about so many different programs. There's a lot of information that they have to learn so that they can pretty much recite it on cue for people who are calling. So I just respect them for all that information that they store in their heads.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
It's a ton. I mean, so many waiver referrals, so many waiver programs, all the processes surrounding that, because each one has a different process for getting the referral to the assessment area. We only assess for a few programs here. The rest go outside the building to other entities that are going to process that assessment. And everyone requires the referral to be sent to them in a different way. So that's just a lot of extra work and a lot of things to keep in your mind when you're trying to complete the work. Mm-hmm. Where does this go? How do I get it there? And then again, just that we are constantly receiving referrals in new ways. So we are trying to help as many people as possible, as quickly as possible, internally and externally. So if we're a little slow to get back to anyone in the building, we apologize.
Please be patient with
us. Yeah, please be patient. We are trying to process just a lot of information and a lot of contacts mm-hmm. from all over. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, to kind of piggyback off of that, we're trying our best. Please be patient. If you have questions, ask. We want to help you as much as we can, but It also helps us to help you faster. Mm-hmm. So if you have questions, just ask, but please just be patient. We're doing the best we can.
Yes. Well, and I would say, I feel like I hear this and people know this, but just to make sure we say it, that the care and compassion that exists across the agency, absolutely, mm-hmm. but also thinking about this department is likely talking to someone in the middle of the crisis for the first time and hearing, you know, whatever's going on for the first time. And we're maybe the first real person they've talked to and the first sort of outlining of the steps. And so, you know, just my appreciation for not only all the knowledge, but also the delicate care in which you provide those callers too.
Yeah. To kind of give a funny perspective on that, we have had a caller tell one of our coworkers, Terry, that she was, quote, an oasis in a cesspool of Medicaid. Because she was actually the one who gave him some good information, like the first real person that he talked to.
Yeah.
And he said, like, you are the first person who was able to give me what I needed without giving me 4,000 other phone numbers. Like, oh, I can't do that.
Yeah.
She may not have been, but she was able to explain from A to Z what he needed to do.
Yeah.
And that's like my favorite thing someone has said, because it really shows how helpful she was to him.
Yeah.
Right. In a like you said earlier, a broken process.
And even if individuals, if we can't give someone a solution, if we can give them information and a roadmap, that in and of itself is extremely helpful and powerful in a world of trying to navigate so many complicated systems.
Yep.
I just want to piggyback on something you said, that we get that initial phone call in screening, or the screeners get that initial phone call. And that phone call can be very emotional. The person may be crying. They can be very upset. They might be angry. And yet we're still responsible for helping them through that phone call and trying to address whatever their need is. And some of the phone calls are just terrible. Mm-hmm. People in very dire situations, young people who are in the hospital have been shot and are now, you know, completely paralyzed. It's their mom on the phone. So there's a lot of emotion that goes into the phone calls and a lot of emotional support that the screeners provide all the callers.
Yeah. And so how do you all support each other or yourselves through a really difficult phone call like that? Do you have a little process or ritual or?
So the way our office is set up, we're pretty close to each other.
It's putting it nicely. Thank you.
So I will go in and kind of, I don't know that unload is the best word, but kind of debrief and unload everything that just happened.
Process.
Yes, process. And a lot of times it's just getting it out and saying, like, here's what I just dealt with. And someone will say, you did everything you could have, should have, would have done, and there's nothing more you could have done. So just hearing that, sometimes I just walk away and go have a snack. Sometimes I need to go sit in my car. There are certain calls that I get that send me to my car crying, and it's, and they know it's coming. So they know, like, just let her go. She just needs a minute.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're very close. I say all the time, I found my people. So it's easy to say, do you have a second? I need to get this out. Mm-hmm. And they'll listen and just give you that peace of mind that you did everything you could.
Yeah. And that's COAAA. I mean, that's who we are to our core, is we are these excellent, caring, compassionate, dedicated clinicians sometimes not clinicians, but individuals that are here for our region to be the place that people can go to help with whatever they need. Mm-hmm. Thank you both so much for being here, for sharing about screening, for doing your wonderful job, and just appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
We appreciate it.
I hope now you know something about the screening department.